Only mode.
Hi friends, welcome again to the continuation of our Dissipation of Glamour webinar series. We've been off the air with this for a little while previously due to sort of fifth-rate technical matters, which we have been fixing, I think, somewhat successfully, and maybe a few more fixes are coming in. But anyway, we're going to resume tonight, and tonight here, at least in Finland, and maybe change the glamour that we've been working on, but I think we're nowhere near solving the great glamour of hatred and the illusion becoming glamour of separateness or separativeness, the great heresy thereof. I'd like to welcome y'all, you know, and Alex and Carl and Clesia and Connie and Deborah, Denise, Francois, Jean, Karen, Linda, Lori, Lorraine, let's see, what are we? Margot, Maria, Martha, Olivia, Paula, Renee, and Yvonne and Zach. I'd like to welcome you all to this work, and there'll be more joining us, and I'll probably miss them here, but okay. And we're backed up in our staff by B.L. Allison and Brett Mitchell, and who are ready, standing by in case we run into various technical any technical difficulties, which can, of course, easily happen as we learn. Okay, friends, I'd like to just have a little alignment here. I'm going to improvise a bit here tonight. I guess I improvised a week ago, and we ran into some technical problems, and I was using a pretty big image because I wanted to just talk to you, but that image kept freezing, so I saw the result, and I think I'll use smaller images from now on. Anyway, let's tune in with each other in the three places where we seem to be most of all, in the Americas, in Europe, and in Australia, New Zealand. Those three places, but there are others, of course. And we just want to get the sense of being together on the plane of higher mind. And if we can visualize it, you know, the light that is generated when we are all in the same space of consciousness, and the love that we feel for each other and for humanity in general, an ever-growing thing as we progress upon the path. And the growing power of the will. Hard to understand, but we're working on it. If you can come to this year's conference in our new venue, we're talking about the will and the way. Well, every one of us has to cultivate the will, and we are all pursuing a path or a way. It's very relevant at this time of global uncertainty and confusion. So we are imaginatively aligned with the will of the hierarchy as it attempts to express the timely aspects of the divine plan. And each one of us has a little part in that expression. We try to be clear about what that little part may be. Act well your part, there all the honor lies, said the poet Alexander Pope. So we want to be clear and play our part with stern resolve, with earnest aspiration, you know. Do it well. While remaining in touch with the soul which is infusing our personal consciousness, and the Antikarana, which is a bridge of light, slowly a building, and the sense of the ashrams and the Christ at their head, and the great process of which we are, in which we are all a part, of which we are all a part. I would just quietly sound the Om to confirm our intention here of learning how to be better cooperators with the divine plan and real servants of the Christ and his hierarchy. And, you know, I did welcome most of you, but Annette and Ario have joined us. Welcome to you and Dacia. Goodness, I hope I don't forget anybody. I'm so sorry if I do. Helen, Deborah, Leslie, people I haven't mentioned before. Did I mention Martha, Michael, and Vera? It's a kind of a memory game here. Victoria. All right. Anyway, welcome to all of you. And if I miss some of you who have just joined, excuse me, but I'm very aware of your presence, in the presence, and that allows us to work together at a time when subjective work becomes incredibly important. Now, you know, it's always, we're working sort of on the technique of the presence, but I keep on thinking that these are such critical times that we need to focus on a few other things as well. I would just say that, you know, when you look at this map here, you see the fourth subplane of the mental plane. It's called the city, or the power, or the capacity that's found there is the factor of discrimination, which is a Mercurian factor aided by Saturn. And the kind of discrimination we're talking about is on the highest level of the mental plane, where our mental unit is found. And that mental unit is very, very important. It has four spirillae, which kind of match up with the three spirillae of the monastic permanent atom. We get seven altogether. But there's that gap, and the Antikarana has to be built to bridge that gap and to allow us entree into our higher consciousness. Discrimination of what nature, you know, and basically it's between the soul and personality. These are trite words, but we see on the world stage today people who are really guided by the soul. You know, we've seen Mandela, we've seen the Mother Teresa, we've seen the Dalai Lama, we've seen a number of people who really, you know, show the signs according to their ray of the infusing soul, and they demonstrate as the soul in expression through the personality. We see all kinds of people as well who are torn between these two pairs of opposites, and they are in a way a vertical pair of opposites, and maybe we ourselves feel, you know, torn in that manner on occasion, because it's really difficult to maintain at this point a steady soul infusion without descending into the elemental life. And we see others, maybe very intelligent, very powerful, who are simply personalities. And their aspiration does not seem to reach toward the higher of the pairs of opposites. Maybe they have a focus within the fifth petal of the egoic lotus. And that's a fantastic petal. You know, it's a Leo petal, you know, from a certain way of numbering. If you start out with Aries at the very first petal in the tier of ignorance and you move forward, there's a lot of Leo energy in that petal, and it takes you all the way from the condition of really distinguishing yourself as a human being and thinking, you know, you're the very center of things. We can call it egoism, if you will, into the sense of loss when your egoism fails and its derivative egotism. We'll talk about the distinction between those two in a little while. And then later in the petal, before it's fully unfolded, we become actually the aspirant. And we begin to have a higher sense of values. Many things have failed us at that point. And we're ready to strive for something higher. And when the petal is fully opened, it means that we can take the first initiation or have taken the first initiation. Well, you know, that discrimination, though, is so important on the world stage today, because we have leaders in many countries who demonstrate particularly the qualities of personality and are guided by those values almost entirely, or some inflation of personality extended to the national level, where we begin to develop a kind of separative nationalism, just as there is the same thing as the separated personality, the separated individual. And that, of course, is retrogressive at this time. We're on the border of preparing for the reappearance of the Christ, with the idea behind it that every human being is of value, and we care for the next step ahead of every human being. You know, everybody's got a next step ahead, and we've got to care for everybody. That doesn't mean we can be responsible for everybody, but subjectively we can put out the energy that will help everybody. So there's such a difference in this factor of discrimination between the four lower levels of the mental plane and the three higher levels. And somehow we have to raise human consciousness, and probably for people like ourselves, by subjective means, into a higher state of awareness, which is much more sensitive and much more inclusive. And I have a feeling, you know, we've got 8 years here until 2025, when the Tibetan tells us in all probability the first steps will be taken toward making the plans for the actual externalization of the hierarchy, at least for the first stages of the externalization. It's in externalization book, I always forget which, either 649 or 699, a great passage there about preparing the way for the coming of the Christ. And then if you look up 2025, you will see that passage about preparing for the actual steps of the externalization. Well, anyway, we are John the Baptist as a group, and we are preparing for that externalization and its subsequent result, the reappearance of the Christ, and this is our major task, a difficult one. And you know what happened to John the Baptist? You know, I don't know whether that's going to happen to the group or not, but we have no other choice, really, except to use those sacrifice petals to show that we really are soul-centered, soul-infusing in process, and do everything we can to bring the idea, the intelligently, of to humanity of the spiritual hierarchy. You know, even Alice Beattie, with all she did, the Tibetan said she didn't do enough to bring the idea of hierarchy before humanity. So we have our work cut out for us, and a part of that is really being able to discriminate between the members of the new group of world servers and men and women of goodwill who are really living a degree of soul infusion, and those who are just stuck in their personality and think that's the end of the world and the whole world revolves around them. And, you know, everybody, everybody's got their progress ahead of them. Everybody's going to succeed eventually, you know, no matter what it takes. But in that fifth petal, you go through some tough times, you know, to thinking you're the greatest in the world, to having some real doubts and being humbled, and then finally being humbled enough to become a true aspirant because you develop a sense of proportion. It's kind of that contrast between Leo that says, look, I am, I'm everything, I'm the greatest, and Libra, which says, hey, there's another person out there too, and we have to develop a kind of reciprocity between ourselves and the other. So what I thought today, taking this idea of discriminating between the soul and personality in mind, I'd like to deal with a particular glamour. We've been dealing with the glamour of hatred and the great illusion, which turns into a glamour, the great heresy of separativeness or separateness, and we'll never stop dealing with that. We'll come back to it, and now and then we'll deal with these world glamours, but there is really a psychological deficiency in some of our leaders. They're just so full of themselves, you might say, and then, you know, go all over the world. Maybe it takes a certain kind of, you know, confidence in yourself, but when it turns into pride and a distorted view of what you are compared to the world, then we have a problem. So I thought, you know, I've got a couple of notes here about egoism. And this egoism factor is a great enemy because it is a mistaken identity. Basically, we are the one. We are pure being. You know, when you start unwrapping all of those veils around us, you're going to find that even the vehicle of the monad is simply a vehicle, and we are that volatile essence of pure being which has been emanated from the one great universal logos, and ultimately we are an aspect of the ray of the absolute which arose from the absolute deity which arose from the absolute. I mean, you know, these are very remote considerations, but that's our essence, and we are more everything and everyone and every possibility than we are any one particular thing. And egoism is the great mistake of getting caught in your appearance, in your temporary phenomenal demonstration, and thinking that's your real identity. And as a result, it opposes itself to all other apparently separate identities, and then we have a great world of fragmentation, which is the very essence of illusion. And as a result of the illusion, our desire nature gets fixated upon advancing this tiny little demonstration of apparent identity as if it were the whole world. And, you know, Master Moria, sometimes he gets humorous. I don't know what to say about him sometimes, but he says that the lower ego is like a ugly ball of fat. Isn't that terrible? But anyway, that's what he says. You know, there it sits in the middle of your field of perception, in the middle of your content of consciousness, and it takes up all this room when in fact it should shrink down to the tiniest point, which in fact should eventually disappear. So let's just say there are people in the world, and a great many of them, who are just coming to the stage, I am, and they think that they are somehow unique and somehow special, and they have a terrible case of mistaken identity. Well, you know, I'm not going to name names, and I don't have to go too far, but you can see what's going on in the world today between quite a number of leaders who just don't get it yet that there's more to life than the tiny little ego. And of course, a way of life which places the highest value upon the ego is called egotism. And it exalts yourself over all others. You may not say so, but you think so. And that kind of way of thinking always leads to separative action, which is against inclusiveness and the welfare of the whole. So the first problem is philosophical. It's egoism. It's mistaken identity. And the resulting way of living, where you exalt yourself above all others because you think you're the only one around, is egotism. And all of this is really part of the glamour of personality. You know, it's kind of a first-ray glamour, but we all have it. And, you know, the glamour of self-centeredness and personal potency, the glamour of the one at the center, all of these things are here. Basically, you're the most important in your whole field of perception. And it's going to take a tremendous humbling before that is broken. And, you know, it will be broken. Inevitably, it will be broken. But what price is there to pay for the individual, and what price is there to pay if the person is a leader for those whom the person leads? The glamour of rulership, dictatorship, wide control, personal ambition, you know, it's all there, and it's based upon mistaken identity. Now, basically, such a person only sees the elemental life, which are the constituents of the lower vehicles and their summation, the personality. Basically, one is aware of one's body, one's energy, one's desires and emotions, and one's wonderful thoughts, you know, better than anybody else's. One's aware of those things, and there's summation called the personality. So we might call the whole thing the glamour of personality, because it's a refusal to reach into the realm of the soul, you know, and basically the whole Black Lodge, the Counterforce, has this in a tremendous sense. They like very well what they've become, and their lower concrete mind has become what DK says is a terrible disaster. It's become a separate sphere unto itself, a kind of eighth sphere, as it is called. There are a number of definitions of the eighth sphere, but anyway, this eighth sphere is very, very smart, and it raises the concrete mind, says DK, to levels unbelievable to us. And they don't want to give that up. And people who are just very happy about their personality don't want to give that up for something better, because they just don't think there's anything better. And it's a refusal to move from the third aspect of divinity into the second aspect of divinity. In other words, you will not move from intelligent power and manipulative ability into love. Will not do it. So you're basically confined into the life of a great Devic life who rules the dense physical level and comes from an earlier solar system, and you're confined and all wrapped up, all involved in your elemental life. You're blind to the larger whole because all you see is what you apparently are. You're looking at yourself in the mirror. This is kind of a negative Venus effect. You know, Venus gives us that reflexive consciousness, which at least says, I am. And it's exactly what we need when we start to individualize. But if you look at your mirror too much, you become a narcissist. You know, you look into the water and you see your image and you fall in love with your own image. And eventually you fall in the water and drown, you know. But narcissism in world leaders is frequently found, self-glorification, self-satisfaction, and all that kind of thing. And it's something that has to be broken by being made aware of larger values, a larger picture, and the value of other people, other countries, and so forth. So such people are, as they say, aching for a break-in, you know, and there's going to be the customary ring pass knot will be broken. Now, the question is, what will be the cost of that? There's a humbling that comes to them, and this is the issue of humility. Now, as we know, the sign Leo is capable of heights of selfless service, but that's after humility and a sense of proportion begin to really enter the consciousness. So we have to break that self-admirative, is there such a word, self-admirative reflection, where you're always seeing how great you are. It has to be broken down, And your ring pass knot has to expand to include many, many others. And in the process, you get smaller and you get smaller and you get smaller. And pretty soon, a true sense of proportion, which we call humility, results. There's going to be pain in this in the second phase of the fifth petal, and maybe countries that glorify themselves, you know, Rome did it, France did it, Germany did it, and all of them had strong Leo components or strong leaders who had a Leo component. Italy is partially ruled by Leo, I think, in their soul nature, but it can be, you know, grabbed by the personality. Hitler had a great big Leo in his chart. France is ruled by Leo on the personality level. These are all places where cosmic evil made its appearance. And the United States is going to be, I think, a country, and maybe the Americas as a whole, but, you know, the United States, the United Nations, where the Christ is going to find his headquarters in the United Nations. At least I think that was part of the plan. And now we have the power of Leo opposing the Aquarius soul, very much in power in our country. And we're going to have to, you know, find a way for the Aquarian soul of the United States to rise above the self-glorifying Leonian tendencies. So what do we need? Those Libran virtues, you know, from the spirit of peace and from the second ray. We need humility. We need proportion. We need a higher sense of values. We need divine understanding. We need some humbling streams of energy, which will allow us, as I'm talking to the United States, to outgrow the adolescent phase through which we seem to be passing, and to really encourage the soul, the Aquarian soul, to emerge. I think all you have to do is look at the rising sign of the past president and the present president, and you have the opposition of Aquarius and Leo, and you will see the results. I'm trying to keep this on a positive level and on a level of the higher energies, where we disciples can work beyond the veil of destructive criticism and work with the great occult methods, which will allow us to be a great heart, second ray, and an inclusive nation that we should be. And along with Britain and along with Russia, the fate of the world is in the hands of these three nations, particularly, says the Tibetan, in the destiny of the nations. So what I thought to do, and see how it goes, is to work with the glamour of egoism. I'm going to call it that, or we can call it the glamour of personality, if you will. It has to do with where so many people are, and they just don't see the picture, the real picture, because they're caught in self-admiration, or self-concern, or all they see is the lower self. And we've got to break that so that it's possible for such people, and we've all been them too, to see more. So that, you know, like I said, I was going to improvise a little bit here in what we're talking about. And rather than I have it all set up to go, you know, to do these readings in the technique of the presence and all that. But I think maybe not. I'm going to begin. This is number 30, and talking about the about egoism. Egoism and its problem. Now, none of us is immune from this. You understand? When are you going to be, you know, the causal body is a big egg. And in Greek, I understand, the word ya ego means I am. Ya ego. So, let's see, where are we here? Okay, so I hope I can find this. Okay. Readings. Okay. Right. So, every one of us has this problem. And, as Madame Blavatsky said, you know, in a withering sort of way, we are all, sort of gray or even black magicians till the fourth initiation. Well, what's this thing about the fourth initiation? And I just want to say, at the fourth initiation, the ego disappears. Well, not the true ego, not the true identity, but the false ego of personality, and even the semi-contained ego of our causal body disappear. And then we can say we are relatively free of egoism. Now, what it may be on the cosmic levels, who knows? You know, I'm sure these great cosmic lords, they have their problems too. But for us, egoism is going to disappear when that causal body disappears and we finally rise into the truer identity of the monad, which becomes very powerful at the fourth initiation, particularly. So now what I'm going to do is open this up to any thoughts you may have. I know that I'm kind of springing this on you in a way, you know. Tuya and I have been working very hard to get our technical difficulties straightened out, and I think that we have done that with our broadcast. We're still in for some reorientation of aerials and redirecting of aerials and things like that, you know, getting our Aquarian ducks lined up in a row and our fifth ray lined up. And we had the gracious appearance of a kind of a representative of the fifth ray avatar come and help us with some of this just recently. So we're on our way there, but we've had to take a little break while we sorted out these technical issues. But now we're working again every week, one way or another, and we'll let you know when we can't. We do have some reorientation coming up of aerials and things like that, which will make it necessary to resume our work next Thursday with the reappearance of the Christ. So about 6 days, we will resume our work, and then we hope to just keep going. Meanwhile, I'm going to open the floor to any of you who would like to ask questions, who would like to offer thoughts, comments, whatever. And before we have our glamour meditation, we will attend to your thoughts. So things are open to you now, if you wish, and if you want to write your thoughts, that's fine. And Brett will read them out, or I'll try to put them on the screen. Or if you want to speak out or speak up, then that's fine too. So the floor is open to you, and if you raise your hand, I'll see you probably. And if I overlook you, either Brett or BL will help me, or Joe will help me recognize that I've overlooked you, and we will make sure that your question or thought is attended to. So, any thoughts or questions you would like to share, this is the time to do that. By the way, you know, can't stop talking, I guess. I just want to say that I'm working on a new installment of the book, The Rays and Initiations, and I'm doing video commentaries on part two, and I guess I've done about 15 of them now in the last week or so, week and a half, and they're all beyond Makara, and it's a wonderful book, and I've been dealing with how to build the Antikarana, and I realize, oh my goodness, 40 years I've been working on it, and I missed all this, and I missed all that. So I'm sure there's always something we can learn, and they will be on Makara for your study, if you like, and a very kind student of the wisdom and very a glutton for punishment, I'm afraid, has volunteered to put these video webinars into print to type out more or less what I've said. So it'll be easier to study, and we're very grateful to her and her staff for that. So anyway, new areas of study and a deeper approach to the rays and initiations are coming out on Makara and are there already. All right, Brett, I seem to hear your voice. Okay, wait a second.
Michael?
Yes, Brett.
Olivia would like to speak.
Okay, I got her. Just saw her, she said. Okay, hello. Olivia, go ahead. You bet.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're good.
Okay, wonderful. Indeed, this really is a wise focus, I think, now on egoism and egotism. So I'll just start with that. It's also a time, I think, when we can work collectively and even more so in an inner way and an outer way. And I was one of the 1 million women marching for equal rights and so forth in Washington, D.C. is where I went. And many of you may have marched too, because we had 600 cities around the world doing that. But I think it's important to, however we are guided, to do this inner esoteric work, focusing on dissipating glamour and illusion, because only esotericists know the formula and the way to do that. That is key. But I think also for those of us who feel called and inspired, it is good to work outwardly as well, and to invite people to think about things with discrimination, discernment, you know, this idea of where there's manipulation, where there's this or that. We can ask questions of our contact lists, however we communicate with other people. So that's my suggestion to all of us, to definitely do the work that we esotericists and spiritual students can only do, which is this work together with glamour, but also working in an outer way. And I will later be speaking more, or contacting people more, about an approach of using certain tools and techniques that scientists have developed in understanding certain outer ways of communication and things to help dispel manipulation. So I think that this is really important to do, because what we're trying to do is to reach people who are confused and open to greater understanding, and we do that through the heart and connecting with them in a universal way, and not polarizing, but also trying to help them develop the discernment and discrimination that is so needed today within humanity.
Great, Olivia. Thank you for those wise words. Yeah, you know, inner and outer work, hierarchy does it too. And they don't only work meditatively, they're actually taking this tremendous risk in a way of externalizing. And this is what we have to do as well when it is given to us to do these things. I think the pressure upon us will be very great in the next years leading to 2025, which is the year of the hierarchical conclave. So if you've studied, if you've served, if you've worked over the last decades, everything you've got now will be called upon to come into expression to help do your share of the divine plan. And I think it's just marvelous how many showed up for the women's marches all over the world. And, you know, we just have to remember what Master Moria said. He said, the women are bringing in the new age. Well, you know, you kind of see that in a way with Madame Rurik, Madame Blavatsky, and Alice Bailey, you know, responsible for some of the most powerful teaching that has hit the consciousness of humanity. All of them women, and, you know, really harbingers of the new possibilities for all of us as we try to enter the Aquarian age in the right way. There's also a wrong way to enter it. Let's just hope we do it all somehow in the right way. So thank you, Olivia, for your thoughts on this.
One more thought. I really do see that this huge collective, collaborative work being part of the initiative to help awaken and inspire humanity and preparing them it's a long preparation, but preparing them to eventually take that first initiation, because we have to activate things within them so that they're not just sitting on the couch, but they're doing things, we're expanding their awareness, and we're getting them involved in the world as world citizens eventually.
Well, I think, you know, when you think about what precedes the first initiation, there are two planets particularly which must do their work before the first initiation can occur, and neither one of them is an easy planet. First of all, we have Pluto dragging everything to the surface, including this sort of latent nativism, which seems to be sweeping the world, you know, kind of a populism, which is a retreat into the personality. And then Vulcan. Well, Vulcan is all the weaponry of the world. That's one thing, but it's also the spiritual will, which allows groups of people to stand with massed intent, as the marching groups have done, and a huge and righteous kind of resistance against the nativism is rising all over the world. We're going to be part of that during the next 8 years, and I think it will be an education for humanity, the likes of which has never been seen. Let's hope for the best, and the Tibetan's last words that he wrote to his groups were, work, my brothers, so I guess that's enough of an injunction for us to do the same. Thank you, Olivia. Okay. Any other thoughts, friends, questions about our subject here? Basically, we're trying to move towards the inclusiveness of the divine plan in a wise way while retaining the unique contribution which each individual and each person has, each nation has to make. We do not want to see this the making uniform of all nations. This would be a disaster. The soul ray and the personality ray under the soul ray has to emerge, and so do the signs of the zodiac typical of each nation, and then the beautiful tapestry can be woven, and not a kind of a dull uniformity, which is due to the lack of imagination of some who consider themselves to be global thinkers. So, you know, it's quite a task to have the individual emerge, the nation emerge in beauty and according to the energies which each nation has. That we have to promote, and we have to promote the soul ray of our nation and the soul sign. Okay, are there questions or comments that you would like to offer? Floor is open. And also, you can write them down as questions if you want Brett to read them out or whatever. You can do that as well. It's a challenge, friends. We're in it now. And, you know, I have to, you know, I'm not a first rate type, but, I do love, Master Moria. I think I know him somehow, you know, from the old days. And, anyway, he would have, you know, maybe he's told you this, but he would have his chancellor bring to him any new name that might be appearing on his enemies list to see if some worthy name had not been added to this list of those who oppose him or opposed him. And the reason for that is because it was his conviction, and it always rings in my ears on bad days, that obstacles are possibilities. Obstacles are possibilities. And, you know, we spiritual types, we're facing big obstacles as the many leaders want their nation to retrench and go back to nativism and the personality expression, but that's the possibility to really educate humanity in a way that has never happened before. And so anyway, obstacles are possibilities. I say it all the time, and on a good day, I can do something about it. Okay, Brett, you have something?
Yes, Jan has a written comment.
Jan. Oh, yes. Okay, let's see. I don't know if I can. Oh, boy. Maybe I try to have. Okay, there we go. Ah, okay. It's a long one, huh? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Right. Okay, Jan, good. Could it be that the current time, in the current time, whatever, that outwardly looks like regression is actually a time of clarification of right human values? I would say so. You know, Taurus is involved here and light. And if we, and that's why I told that little story about the ones who opposed Master M when he was a great ruler of various kinds. It always clarifies our thinking when we know what our opposition is attempting to do. The leaders of this world have had these egoic expressions as long as we have had human history. And by egoic, you mean expressions of the lower ego. I think that's what you mean. When DK uses that word egoic, he oftentimes means soul, but okay. These expressions of ego, so long as we have had human history, and most have slipped by in this expression without question. Now, okay, now that is a blatant in-our-face expression that cannot be overlooked, indeed, and our communication system in the world makes it exactly that. The problem is coming out in its ugly glory, to be seen, agreed, recognized, and disregarded as the path humanity chooses to take. Well, it's let's just say that I think the majority of humanity is enough soul influenced that a path of egoistic nativism and retrenchment into personality values will be rejected. It may be a time of great clarification in this. I agree entirely with that idea. And the lessons may be hard, but you know, we have had in the world immature leaders, or those with in whom something is seriously psychologically wrong. Somehow they've had the power to rise into prominence, but the world is now a great stage, and it's an arena for the observation of ourselves and others. Never has there been a time with communication when this has been possible. And I just saw that every attack on a freedom of speech is somehow a recognition of the danger that comes to psychopathology when it is revealed. So, you know, watch out for the four freedoms there and those who attack them. Freedom of speech will be the first. Then, you know, freedom of worship is already being virulently attacked by certain groups. Then, of course, the question of sharing freedom from want, and then the question of armaments, freedom from fear. I hold the four freedoms as the touchstone that of shambolic indication that has to be preserved, because, as DK says, it's as much of Shambhala as humanity can get, understand at this time. So yes, our education is coming, and while we're being educated, we have to be part of the process and act accordingly. I think we will see things in the next number of years that we've never seen before, and hopefully it will lead to the a proper emergence of humanity with the kind of values that will invoke the hierarchy into a closer approach. So thanks, Jan, for those thoughts. Appreciate them. Now, what else? Anybody else want to say something? Want to offer something? You're welcome to. just scanning, you know. It's a big subject, and, were you saying, you know, Livy or something, sit at home on the couch? I think the era of the couch potato is over. At least I don't think disciples have a tendency to be couch potatoes anyway. But this is a mobilization. Now, for many, it has to be an esoteric interior mobilization, at least that. And for others, they will be able to add to it strenuous outer work, which DK strongly approved of during the time of the Second World War. You know, he knew his disciples were doing the inner work, but he wanted them to engage in the outer work as well. So, everyone is going to have to come to his or her own conclusion about what that work will be. Nobody can tell you what it has to be, but let's just say the promotion of goodwill in the world and the promotion of the triangles. We have this huge instrument called the triangles, in which we use the great invocation, which is the most prominent means of invoking the reappearance of the Christ. And it just esoterically, it does what has to be done in terms of the etheric body of the planet. So if you've let your triangles lapse, or you're just a little bit lukewarm about that, you know, jump in again and really get going in the triangle's work and let us know here, you know, Tuya and me here, particularly on the triangles, and we have a global triangles address that you can write at gmail.com, I think it is, and reactivate your triangles, form new triangles. Let's get those 100,000 triangles, which the story goes, Alice Bailey told another worker that the Tibetan had told her that the 100,000 triangles would be the turnaround point. So let's get those triangles going in such a way that they really grow exponentially during the next 8 years before the great conclave. Okay, anybody else before we do our meditation? Yes, okay. Tuya, there you are. Okay, I'm glad you and Livy having a chance to speak. Go ahead.
Yes, you hit the point, because I am so fascinated now about the triangle work, and maybe again emphasize that why the triangle work for us is the great answer, because the Buddhas of activity can work through the triangles, energize the triangles, and use them in the emergency times. And if that is not emergency, what we have at the moment, so what is? Maybe even more horrible times are ahead in our lives too. We never know about the climate, how, what it is going to affect and how. And everybody knows what is going on in the United States. We are really in the time when the war is going on the mental plane. And my some kind of thought is about that, because so many people have sleeping difficulties. And disciples, I have been speaking now past a few weeks with many of my friends, and it seems to be everywhere. And I think it is the reason, because there is really the mental plane, on the mental plane, the war. And that's why we should strengthen our folks, our lines together, stand really, really strongly together and work via the triangles, because that is the thing, how the hierarchy and even from Shambhala can be affected upon Earth directly.
Yes, it's a very, very good thought. What is our address? The Global Triangles at gmail.com?
Yes.
Global, all one word, Global Triangles at gmail.com. I guess, you know, Agni Yoga's books made such an impression on me. You know, when I used to commute 4 hours in New York to go to the Arcane School, 2 hours this way, 2 hours that way, and I listened to nothing but Agni Yoga books. And then when I hit the pavement, I put on my Walkman, as they call it in those days, and I listened to the Agni Yoga books, occasionally Cosmic Fire. But anyway, Master Moria said that sometimes the tension on the inner planes is so very, very great that people just cannot sleep. They don't go out of the body, you know, because it's just so such a clash. And by the way, I just want everybody to give a real wave of love to Daniel Enten, who's been the head of the Agni Yoga Society now for quite a number of years. He passed on. I think he was quite elderly, maybe 90. I don't know. Just recently I received word that he had passed on, and he's done so much to help Agni Yoga not be in any way separative, but to join in with the other esoteric groups. And I just have a lot of gratitude for him, you know, and I think that we just give him a real shot of support there on the inner planes, where I know he's doing, continuing the great work he's always been doing. So anyway, that thought about Master M and the tension on the inner planes and what we're going to have to learn to live with, especially these next number of years. Okay, thank you, Tuya. Any other thoughts before we get into our meditation?
Yes,
Brett?
We have a written comment from Michael Starr.
Starkrow. Okay. Let's see. Get you, Michael, here. Right.
Two of them.
In fact,
in fact.
Okay. So let's see what we got here. What I have is, oh, wow, long, huh, Michael? Okay, this is spot on glamour. And then what Olivia spoke about with working in an outer way, also the very relevant eighth and the mind. Yes, which is crystallized and unwilling to release the elevation on or go higher. Yes, exactly that. Eighth sphere, defined in many, many different ways. HBB defined it as a dust bin that was following a kind of a sphere following after the earth. DK defines it maybe more metaphysically, which is really literally a drug high. There was a lot of discussion about this presidential election as if it just occurred. The state of the world, yeah, it's really going on, of course. The state of our world, we collectively chose it by not creating physical infrastructures that are even remotely close to the opposing force. So we do have to now wake up and withstand through the power of Vulcan, which is the spiritual will, all that Pluto is dragging to the surface. We have allowed corruption to play out in front of our eyes, indeed, and it has been ego that has obstructed our ability to set aside semantics and absolutes in order to create the physical horizontal infrastructure here on Earth. Well, yes, you know, you're talking a seventh-ray language now, and I really understand how the consummation of higher ideals has to be made objective. I guess first we have to fight our way through certain issues around values. The darker forces have set up plans that have manifested in physical reality while still channeling or harnessing the etheric. Yes, there are dangers at this present time, and hopefully we are equipped sufficiently to deal with them. At least we have to call upon all our resources. We have the backing of the sacred evolution, but we are lacking more physical infrastructure. Well, you know, we've got to be practical. And, you know, Livy was speaking to this about the outer action as well as the inner action. And this, as we are reorganizing, is essential for people to have the space to even choose a lighted path. So, you know, all of you who are strongly conditioned by the seventh ray, you know, get on the task of manifesting even in your local environments what can be done, and it will lead to a larger issue. Now, I don't want to get into politics too much here, but, you know, we had FDR long ago with these make-work projects and lifting us out of the depression. We have some interesting intentions on the part of those presently in power for infrastructure work, but let's see if it even becomes a priority with all the kinds of conflicts which are being provoked and for which the backlash can be expected. And then you say, without the real-time physical infrastructure, there is a serious difficulty for humanity to step away from their daily routines, which often involve multiple layers of supporting the darker tendencies and obstructing or blocking the greater soul evolution. Well, you know, wherever we are, if there's some archetype, if there's some new pattern, it's got to start with us in our own little lives, and then we will become voters and promote this idea. Public opinion will change, and the whole infrastructure idea of rebuilding our nation and the nations of the world can have a chance. It will certainly happen in the seventh ray age, but we're in that interesting confluence between the waning of the sixth ray, which has all of that recrudescence and a real heavy energy, and the incoming of the seventh. So expect turbulent times. And, you know, let us learn more and more about what the seventh ray can bring to us. Thank you, Michael, for these practical thoughts. Okay, anything else, Brett, from anybody? I guess we're going to, you know, move on here to our meditation. Yes? Go ahead.
There's just a brief comment from Leslie about Daniel Anton.
Okay, let's see. Right.
Above.
A few weeks before his 90th birthday, Jordy. Wow. A few weeks before his 90th birthday. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he, you know, he was really, and I just want to tell you about how some of this stuff works. Master DK and his groups borrowed a lot of first-rate disciples, and they kind of stiffened the resolve of the predominantly second-rate groups, and you know, Foster Beatty was in there, Mary Beatty was in there, you know, first-rate leaders following after Alice Beatty. Well, you know, in Agni Yoga, there were a bunch of first-rate leaders, and they had the first-rate virtues and some of the first-rate liabilities. And then along comes Daniel Enton. And I said to him, Daniel, so, you know, you're with Master Moria, right? Well, he says, you know, I've always felt that Kuthumi was my master. It's kind of a reverse borrowing. And he did act like a second-rate type. He had some first-ray, of course. But he acted within that very first-ray group in a second-ray manner. And it was so very interesting about the new group of world servers and the cross-fertilization of the ashrams, which began in 1925. So we can be lucky that I think no group remains absolutely pure on its ray, but is moderated by the rays of others who are on loan. And Daniel kind of felt he was a bit on loan there in the middle of a first-ray group. I think that was interesting. Okay. Thank you, Leslie. All right, friends, I'll tell you what, we're going to move on. We're going to move on, and I think we're going to move on. Yes, we are. And we'll do our little meditation. It doesn't take long. Just have to find it. And let's see, here we go. No, do we go? Yes, we go. Okay. Excuse me. So our word or our glamour is sort of the glamour of personality. It's really the glamour of egoism. It's a major, major mistake which misdirects and warps all the energies which should be dedicated to the greater good and instead serve an ingloriously magnified illusion, which the lower ego is, however necessary it may be, in the beginning. Is not necessary anymore for advanced human beings, and we have to find a way to, well, you know, the veils of Maya have been rent by the Christ and by Saint Paul and by Moses. You know, they made their various rents in the veils of Maya, and the little egg of egoism has to be cracked. And you know, the sun is in detriment in the sign Aquarius. Now, the sun is also the symbol of the lower ego, and we can expect a decentralization of the ego in the lower sense to occur as we progress through the age of Aquarius, but we certainly have to start now. All right, friends, thank you, and let's proceed with our work, our meditative work. So, we have quite a few of us here, but we reach out to each other in general and feel that we are coming together on the plane of the higher mind and in the lotus field where we're all unified and somehow serving each other through the exchange of egoic energy, not the energy of the lower ego, the personality, but the energy of a higher ego consciousness within the causal body. So just a few moments of silence as we get the sense of all of us are participating in this service work. And, you know, there's a real coming together here, and space is an illusion in the way it's usually considered, and whatever relative time we're in, we're all here now. So we're going to make the sign of the cross, the long arm cross here, Forehead, chest, right eye, left eye, right eye. As we sound this protective formula. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And as we work within the light, we are protected from these very insidious forces which have to be neutralized. Now, in terms of the energies, in the preparation for the kind of work we have to do, we will focus the dual light of matter, the light of especially the etheric physical plane, especially the etheric, drawing it up imaginatively to the mental plane, and there the light of mind is found. So we blend those two lights, the light of matter and mind, and we have a vitalized mental energy on the mental plane in our mental vehicles. And we meditate on soul contact, and imaginatively we seek to recognize soul light, however we do that. Sometimes people find that point of bright light above their head, different ways of doing it. The light of the soul becomes real to us, imaginatively first, then more and more real. And then we fuse imaginatively the two lesser lights of matter and mind with the light of the soul on the higher mental plane. We bring them together on the mental plane. And we develop what's called the mind held steady in the light. A triple light becomes one light. Try to feel this. We have these interpenetrating vehicles, and how you visualize this is up to you. But three lights have come together: the vital light of matter, the light of the mind, which can reveal greater light, and the light of the soul, all together. And then we, with this in mind, we say together, the light is one. And in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Sound the Om in confirmation three times. Oh. Oh. The light of day is the scorpionic light of the Buddhic plane, and eventually intuition will play its part as a dispelling agent. First the fifth ray working with glamour, and then the fourth ray working with illusion. Now we enter the formula. And we say aloud together, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And we have our searchlight now. We turn it on, and it's a light upon the astral plane. And that's what we do, what we've just said. We reach into the world of meaning, we bring it down. We bring in the light of the soul, aided by the light of mind and the light of matter. And we bring light to the astral plane. Eventually it will be the vehicle of the intuition where the light of day is reigning. Now, in order to strengthen our work, from the sacrifice petals, from the will synthesis petal, from the jewel in the lotus, from the atmic plane, all some of those imaginatively, of course, and even from the monad imaginatively, we call in the spiritual will, which is the will to see the purpose expressed through the divine plan. And we're going to strengthen our beam, our group beam, with this willingness to allow the spiritual will to work through us as a group and as individuals, to make sure that we willingly do our little part in expressing the divine plan. So however you want to imagine that, the spiritual will enters the beam, fortifying it, making it still more powerful, more irresistible. And as we imagine this, we say the following together. With power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. With power upon its beam, light is focused on the goal. And this is the dissipation of the dark clouds of glamour which obscure and distort reality and block the greater vision and the greater revelation. Now we're going to, realizing that the glamour of hatred is still, there, and the great heresy of separateness, and we're going to come back to that, of course. It's impossible not to. We're going to work with this glamour of egoism, translated as the glamour of personality. And the resultant egotism, which arises from the great mistake of perception we call egoism. So we say together, the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of egoism. We visualize this. And the necessary proportion to prevent the appearance of this glamour of inflation, of that which is essentially not real. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of egoism from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour of egoism. And for the next 5 minutes, we'll use those words of power as we visualize the light penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and its dissipation. 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose as we see this work proceeding. We will continue our work with this glamour, which forces people under its spell to desire the good only of that which they see as themselves, and prevents them from realizing that all human beings are one, the sons of men are one, and I am one with them. This glamour of egoism works against the realization of the truth of the mantra of unification. It is a fundamental mistake, and it is related to the great heresy of separateness. It's the great heresy of separate identity and of unrelated identity. It's a glamour of self-exalting isolation. It's just the opposite of isolated unity towards which we all strive. So now, our will-enforced beam of light out there on the astral plane, dissipating the clouds, encouraging the coming in of the Sun of Truth and Inclusiveness, we withdraw it from the astral plane. We withdraw our beam, we focus within the group mind now, and we, as it were, imaginatively, we shut off for the time being the searchlight. Although, of course, you can, you know, individually you can revive this for short moments during the day as you launch your discriminative attack on whatever glamour may be holding you individually, and identifying with the group, the larger glamour of mistaken identity, which we are dealing with here. It's hard to understand egoism and its resultant egotism, but it is a fundamental distortion when something very, very small and unreal is given a huge place within the field of consciousness and energies are turned towards its support rather than the welfare of the whole. And now we will sound the Om together three times. Purifying each aspect of the personality, but especially the astral field where so much distortion occurs and which is called for present humanity the plane of the great illusion. First the mental and then on down. The Sun of Truth, the Sun of Inclusiveness and Unity, and the Sun of Divine Vitality shine through the lower 18 subplanes wherein man perforce lives at this time, that there be a clarification of all lower conditions so that at last the lower world of becoming can reflect the higher archetypal world of being. Okay, friends, thank you very much. We will resume 6 days from now. Hopefully all of our reorienting work will be done. And it will be with the reappearance of the Christ on February the 2nd. And this time we had an evening, for at least for us, a presentation of a webinar. But next week, the whole thing is evenings, at least in terms of GMT, 5 p.m. GMT, beginning with the reappearance of the Christ meditation. Remember how very, very important these meditations are. You've got to be with them. Do it yourself or do it with us. Doesn't make any difference, but do them. Reappearance of the Christ, attracting money for hierarchical purposes, the triangles meditation, the glamour-busting meditation, and invoking the soul of the nations so that their causal body may grow in such a way that the true new schools of esotericism may appear and the hierarchy can plant its influence noticeably in each one of these nations. So thank you, and we'll be back with you in 6 days. Meanwhile, keep up the good work, and we will proceed subjectively, objectively, during these next years, and it won't be said of us what was said of the disciples at the time of the Second World War. There weren't enough, they didn't try hard enough, etc. That won't be said of us, okay? We'll make it through and play our proper part. So thank you all for showing up, meditating, and we'll be back with you before long. Meanwhile, there's plenty to study on Makara, and if you're really aching for a trip with the Ageless Wisdom, join the Moria Federation, and we'll give you a good workout. Okay, see you later, and thank you. Thank you, everybody.